Hello, everyone, and welcome to the August 19th, 2015 edition of Weekly Manga Recap. I'm our ruler of time, here alongside Rolo T. Chris, how are you doing?
How are any of us really doing when you stop to think about it?
Are we going to have a philosophical discussion right now?
No, I'm kind of just wondering if, like, I'm still hungry or not. I guess that was what I was kind of getting at. I was like, should I eat something today, or should I just...
I shouldn't eat anything today.
Should I go on a fast to make a statement against what's in the news today? Jared Subway? No, that's pretty. that's pretty hot button.
That would be a pretty good way to fast, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm like, I won't eat Subway anymore. No, I don't want to. I don't want to do that. Okay, here we go. This seems like an important topic. James McAvoy is going to be in a Young Frankenstein movie. So I'm protesting against that. I'm going to fast to protest against this movie.
Young Frankenstein is in the Mel Brooks?
No, he's just playing like a young... It just happens to be like a young Dr. Frankenstein and I guess presumably Frankenstein's monster.
Well, I did hear a while back that Daniel Radcliffe was going to be Igor in a Frankenstein movie. So
yeah, that's what Daniel Radcliffe's the other person. I just maintain, Nick, that I'm really bummed that it seems like James McAvoy can't be in a good movie if it's not an X-Men movie. Like, I feel like he should be getting something else, but everything else I see him in, I'm just like, this is pretty awful.
Oh, what are you talking about? Wanted was a great movie.
Yeah, sure it was. It's pretty amazing. Maybe he's been in something that I just, like, have forgotten. No. Muppets Most Wanted, really? You were the UPS guy in Muppets Most Wanted?
Well, it was probably a silly cameo.
I watched Muppets Most Wanted, though, and I don't... Well, you missed a classic. And by classic, I mean you should watch the opening song on YouTube and then just not watch the rest of the movie because you've seen the only good part.
Yeah, I know a lot of people didn't really care for that movie as much as whatever they did. Just the Muppets, I guess, the one that came out before that.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
I really shouldn't do that. Never mind. I'm not going to explain it because then he'll still get mad at me. So, anyway, I'm going to very violently shift topics right now because we have a special guest on the show, Chris.
Okay. Who?
You could say he's making a cameo like James McAvoy did, except that you're not going to be able to ignore this one. Because he'll be talking to you constantly.
Wait, was he in the... Was our guest in the Muppet movie as well?
I don't know. Jamie, were you in the Muppet movie?
Michael, Kermit the Frog here.
Well, Kermit wouldn't be a cameo. He's the star of the Muppet movie. Don't you dare tell me Walter
is. Oh, this joke is ruined now.
None of it makes sense. You've bumbled it all up.
We're going to have a pretty big discussion this week on a series called Shaman King. It's a very long series, and so we got the idea to have someone else on the show. And as it so happened, right before we had the idea, I had been talking with this gentleman about it, because I thought that he had read it before, and then, of course, he engaged me in conversation about it. I was like, oh yeah, he has read it. And his name is Jamie. I guess you are known online as Hawkfoot. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm just a guy that's going back to school, going in for hospitality.
I just want to note, you're starting this off like you're a harem protagonist. You're like, I'm just an average guy,
wait,
you know,
wait,
nothing too special.
Protagonist?
Harem protagonist. No, you're not Sailor Moon. You don't fucking get a compact disc and turn into a Sailor Scout tonight.
I'm sorry, I'm just on heroin protagonist right now.
Or heroin protagonist, where it's like, I do a lot of drugs, but I'm the good guy. I'm like Artie Lang if he were the hero of the story.
I don't know, I'm getting awesome visuals from all three of those.
Yeah, I know, I actually kind of want this series where Artie Lang is filled as fucking high on smack and he's fighting Magneto.
Anywho... No, I'm just, I just stream games, I'm just a normal guy. I really don't have much to say.
Holy shit, man! I'm gonna make a Nisekoi sequel starring you, where you're just like, I'm just an average dude. Nothing ever strange happened to me until the day I met her and her and her. And she's kind of a quasi love interest, but not exactly. But there's a couple chapters teasing it. And then that lolly girl's over there just to satisfy that one fetish. But I'm not into that. I want to stress, I am not into that.
Dude, why are you spoiling Volume 5 already? How could you?
Well, I feel like you should be up to date on this fictional series that doesn't exist quite yet.
I think that we should have you really hit the ground running by having that, you know, chance meeting where, you know, the two people finally collide, except that you meet all your love interests at once that way. It's just like a giant 7-way collision or something like that. And
you
all get up there like, hey, watch where you're going. I definitely don't like you.
You all meet trying to recover a fumble in a hit a football game.
Dude, I would totally read the hell out of a harem series that was themed around a girl, a mixed gender football team.
It was like, what a specific way for us to all meet, but it happened.
Like, one person is like, that is my fetish right there.
Have you been reading like my Warcraft RPs or something?
Well, your World of Warcraft RPs are about football harems? What's happening in Goldshire nowadays? This is craziness.
What
no.
A secondary love interest. That's what going into Orgrimmar is.
I guess Garrosh was kind of Sundare. He had a bit of that attitude towards him, like, oh, it's not like I like you or anything, Thrall. Just want to kill all the humans. He was a jerk. Anyways, I feel we should get on topic, Nick, because there's only so many hours of daylight left to burn, and we have a lot of series to talk about. We have a big epic. This was a Jump classic, you could say. Had what?
I'm not sure I'd call it a classic.
300 chapters, something around
that. It's fair share of success, and I guess the legacy is strong enough that the author has actually made a number of spin-offs and sequel series and stuff like that. I think he's actually got a sequel series that's currently running right now.
So, it's not in Jump, though, and to stress clearly off the front, at least I didn't read any of the sequel series.
Nope.
Nick clearly didn't. I don't know if Jamie has.
I think I remember catching it, like, I heard, oh, there was going to be a sequel with Yo's son and stuff. I'm just like, wait a minute, what? I think I caught the first, like, chapter or two of that, but from there it stopped, and I wasn't sure if they kept on going with it. So I'd have to check that out again.
Okay, so we really won't be bringing up the sequel series in any way, shape, or form. So maybe some of the things we'll bring up, maybe questions we might have, are answered in those sequel series. Just understand ahead of time now, we don't have. I was gonna say we don't have any knowledge of that. Nick's
we won't have all
well.
The answers.
Before we even get into the series, though, I want to talk very briefly about my interaction with Shaman King, because
you have a story about this, don't you?
Yeah, I was not a Shaman King kid. If you're aware, it had a 4Kids dub, and it ran on Fox Kids. Now, those of you youngins in the audience maybe aren't aware, but back in the day, or in the Dizay, as some of us like to call it in our hipper generation, in the Dizay, there was a vicious blood war going on between fans of the two primary Saturday morning cartoon blocks, Kids WB and Fox Kids. There was like ABC Disney Kids, and you sucked if you watched that. It was the lamest cartoons. It was bullshit.
Well,
but
Saturday morning, didn't everyone like that block?
No. But you had you had Fox Kids and Kids WB, and I was firmly on Kids WB. I almost exclusively watched that. So I didn't watch any of Shaman King. My friend Frank did. I kind of picked up a little bit of it from him, but I did have one strong interaction with Shaman King, and that was I picked up a game on the Game Boy Advance called Shaman King Legends, which was a Pokemon ripoff right down to the point where there were two versions of the game, Wolf and Hawk version, that you had to buy both of them so you could trade all of the spirits with one another. And I could say, without any hyperbole, it was the worst video game I have ever played in my life. It was pure, unmitigated garbage. Just this confusing, shitty, Pokemon ripoff that didn't make any sort of sense. Because you know how Pokemon have type matchups? You know, certain types are stronger than others.
Sure.
They had that in Shaman King. They do not explain it anywhere in the game or in the fucking manual. I guess you're just supposed to figure out the obtuse typing system that's like, oh yeah, of course graveyard spirits are stronger than city spirits. What are you, stupid? And instead it's like...
That sounds like some of those early Yu-Gi-Oh! Game Boy games that they had.
Yes.
Where they were just like, oh yeah, your mystical elf can, you know, beat a blue eyes white dragon just because type matchups all, and that's it.
And you're like, this is so stupid. Why did you do this?
If someone messages me and says, no, mystical elf actually helps blue eyes white dragon, shut the fuck up. You know, I'm just making an example out of thin air. I didn't play that shitty game.
But yeah, I had a bad impression of Shaman King because I was so angry I bought that game that it just seethed in me for years. I would like to say that's probably why I wasn't on Weekly Manga Recap until now. I was just still harboring a deep-seated grudge over the fact that I spent $30 and I probably didn't even earn myself. I probably got it from like allowance or something like that. But I was still just so bitter over that shitty game.
What was the one series that you...
Flame of Recca?
Was that the one that you spent a bunch of...
I spent like $80. Spent about $80 buying volumes of that garbage series. And eventually...
We're going to read that one eventually, don't you know that?
At some point, yeah. I'll fucking go to a garage sale where they're probably like 10 cents a fucking volume at this point.
And you'll be like, this used to be worth so much!
You don't understand how much I paid for this in my day! Like, yeah, Grandpa.
Sir, take off that fake gray beard and go away.
No, senior discount.
Senior discounts at a garage sale, asshole.
Do you have an introduction to the series yourself, Nick?
I knew it existed, and then I read it.
Well enough.
Mine's way less interesting, isn't it?
For me, it was like, I remember it aired on Fox back in the day. I didn't really watch it so much.
Yeah, because Fox Kids turned into that.
Yeah. I remember it was on there. I like caught an episode or two, and I'm just like, what the heck is going on? But I like the character designs a lot, and this will play into more later. I go back to it, I know it was a manga, I start talking to it with a friend of mine, and it turns out she is a huge fan of it, and turns out she has, like, up to date on the manga, and I'm just like, can I borrow that? Because the biggest draw to the series for me, I have a interest with Native American culture and designs and everything like that. So from the episode, I remember being introduced to Silva. I didn't know his name at the time, but I was just like, who is this character? That guy is freaking awesome. So I go back to the manga, and that I just marathon the heck out of the series, and I've just been interested in it ever since because of the concepts and everything else, the characters and what have you. So that's what hooked me initially. I know it was asked before as far as my name is concerned. Yes, Hawkfoot. Yes, it's a generic sounding native name, blah, blah, blah. I feel kind of bad about it at this point. I have to put up a disclaimer right now. I am not saying any kind of tribal affirmation. Anything I say is, not founded in any real, factual or anything. Because you want that kind of answer, you go to somebody about that themselves. Everything that's in this series as it is, when it regards the Native American characters, is completely stereotypical and influenced. So anybody who reads it, don't pay it any mind. But that's kind of what drew me into the series anyway, and I've just been enjoying it ever since.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, we had a little conversation about this topic, you know, Native American representation in the series, and while we agree, it's like, this is kind of stereotypical and very flat, it's just weird because I think this is, well, it's not the first time that I've seen any Native American characters in manga. It's the first time I've ever seen, like, anything about Native American culture to any depth in manga represented.
Even if it is stereotyped, it is probably one of the few manga series out there that it actually has a lot more of a presence as well, considering that their Patch tribe is, you know, the people behind the tournament as it is.
The central figures behind sort of the structure of everything in this.
Yeah, and they're just officiating. They're trying to remain as neutral as possible. And that was one thing that I really liked about them, as far as, you know, yeah, they end up being badasses, but there's internal politics, there's, you know, people taking sides in there too, and it floored me what was really there. And despite the fact, okay, you have your stereotypical theme, but them as individuals really sold it to me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think the only other series I can think of that ever had really Native American characters that comes to mind would be Part 7 of JoJo's, just because it was a race across the U.S., so they had to go across a couple of Native American territories, and there was, I think, one character, like a stand user, who was Native American, but outside of that...
But Chris, you're forgetting Ishield 21's Tatanka. Come on, Chris.
I'm trying to think who that was.
He was the...
I mean, I can... I'm building a visual in my mind.
Of the 5-8 players for Team USA, and he was super tall, and he had his dome ability, which was immediately beaten.
I remember Brad Walker.
I know!
I remember the movie star.
I remember Mr. Dodd. I remember Bad Walker or Bud Walker or whatever.
Yeah, I remember the movie star.
And... Who was the last one?
Oh, now that you say it, I am vaguely recalling. Was he just some giant Indian dude who just had face paint on?
He was 6'10", and he had really long arms and legs, and so he's like, I can deflect every pass that's thrown in my direction. That's my whole character. And then Sakuraba and Takami are like, we've got a new technique to exploit our height, and we beat you. Yay! He never played a role in the rest of the game.
No, I did forget about him. Somehow, I feel like if we do like a top 10 Native American characters, he'll still show up as like number 4.
I'm actually gonna look that up on YouTube after this. Now, just be like, is there a list out there for this? I'd be intrigued.
I thought you were gonna look up Tatanka on YouTube. It's like they did not get that far.
They never did that part in the Ishield 21 anime. So you're out of luck, dude.
Well, no, just as far as. That's the thing. It's the same deal with Japanese mangaka and anime artists, that they take the stereotypical stuff of like of black characters, of Native American characters, of overseas characters. They run with it. But that's the thing that kind of drew me into it as well, is what's the truth behind these stereotypes? And that's why I went and did some soul searching and stuff too, and that ended up being a big influence. So that's probably one thing to take home from everything in the series, is what's the truth behind all these characters' backstories and nationalities too.
Oh, I mean, I guess we'll get into that because we're talking about, you know, some themes and stuff, but, you know, just as an introduction into the series, basically we start off with meeting this kid, this 13-year-old kid named Asakura Yo, and he does not leave a good first impression, I will argue, because basically the way he explains himself is he just wants to be left alone and have a carefree life, which is kind of weird. It's like, that is the least shonen thing I think I've ever heard for a protagonist. It's like, I just want to be left alone and chill.
It reminded me a lot of... I hate to bring this up. It reminded me a lot of Sonic's character in Sonic X. Ugh. Sorry, I brought that up.
I told you already I didn't watch Fox Kids. I don't know these references. Smack. That's my mic flying out the window in anger. You know what? Well, when you're referring to this, Nick, how are you just referring to the first chapter, or
just like the first impression? Eventually, okay. He's explained to the point where he's like, "Yeah, I want to have a carefree life and stuff, which is what drives me to want to get this, you know, great position and so on and so forth." And then eventually, we learn that that's also not his only motivation. He's got like this promise that he's made to someone he really cares about and stuff.
Oh, we don't find that out until, like, for a long 180 time. Chapters later, which...
For a long time, but
at
yeah,
that point, almost seems to contradict his initial, like, statements. Like, it's almost like, you didn't... Did you have this in mind when you wrote him early on? Because it really seems like...
It really
like,
doesn't seem so.
It seems like he would have mentioned something along these lines at some point.
Because Yo starts off very differently from, I think, your regular shonen protagonist, in that basically, he doesn't want any trouble. You know, he wants to chill and not sweat the small stuff, and these things come up that he has to take care of, and he finds basically peaceful ways to resolve themselves because he's got this kind of hippie attitude, almost. Eventually, he becomes a very, friendship is very important, and everything can be solved with friendship type of character. And that transformation, honestly, does not take very long to take effect.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, while he has a unique motivation at first for showing protagonist, thank God he changed, because I really didn't like, he was just like, I don't want to do anything. I was like, well, why am I reading your story then? You're an unmotivated douchebag.
This is one of the few times, Nick, I would have to disagree. I actually enjoyed Yo a lot early on. I guess primarily because he's so contrary to what you generally get with shonen characters. I could see your point of he's unmotivated, so why should I be motivated to care about his story? But it was just nice to see a shonen protagonist who isn't loud or annoying or hyperactive or loves to eat food constantly. Like, Yo's just a character, like, basically every panel he should be drawn with a joint in his hand. He's just like, yo, guys, we control ghosts. Like, why don't we just talk to them and stuff? And, I mean, it's you know, you can make jokes about how he's like, so casual and laid back, but... It's in that point of his that he is this, like, I really don't want to live a troubled life, but it's not one where he's like, I'm going to just take the easy way out. He actually is going the extra mile to ensure he has one, and the way he does that is anytime he encounters people, at least early on, he goes as far possible out of his way to completely resolve the problem. There are points where he has won a fight completely, and he puts himself in further risk by essentially saying, like, this conflict isn't done, though. I may have beaten you, but you aren't satisfied with yourself. There's a bigger problem here.
The reason why you wanted to attack me still has to be taken care of. I have to, you know, help you now that I've beaten you, and only then will I be victorious, basically.
And when Yo cares that much about these antagonists he runs up against... It goes on a little long, which is sort of a theme throughout this story, just as much as Harmony and fucking Reincarnation is, but it is, I feel, a lot more satisfying, because when he cares about them, you're like, there's a genuine payoff when they finally do reach the end. It doesn't feel as forced as some other series, because the answer isn't always just, like, pure friendship. Like, we get to the story with Tokugaro, the sort of, like, snake samurai who... You know, was killed by a Midamaru in the past, and Wow is seeking revenge for him. And he goes this long sort of thing, eventually, like, gets into his backstory, and you find out, like, he's really just, you know, incredibly lonely, and he's had nowhere else to displace his rage until this point. And, you know, they finally, I mean, yes, you can sum it up as, like, yes, friendship's the answer, but it's not as, like, blunt as that, I guess. It's handled a little bit more delicately in a way that was like, oh, I'm actually compelled by this. I can enjoy this development, and I feel it was satisfying.
I agree with you to a certain point, but as you said, it kind of goes on a little long at some points. Mm-hmm. For example, there is literally There is literally a point, and this is still fairly early on, where basically they're at the point where they're participating in this tournament, and they've traveled to America, and this one guy sees them, and he's like, hey, let me join your team. And they're like, why? He's like, because I'm awesome. Like, this is my ability. Check out how awesome I am. Also, you guys suck. And they're like, fuck you. And he's like, no, you guys are dumb and weak and stupid, and I'm way cooler. And like, well, I'm going to kick your ass now. Oh, are you? And he just beats the crap out of two of Yo's close friends. Then Yo beats him and is immediately, and while he's fighting him, says, I will never team up with someone who has hurt my friends in order to use me. And then he beats him, and then he says, okay, let's team up.
Yeah, let's go, buddy.
It's like, what the fuck? It's like, you took like a chapter to change your mind, and you gave him what he wanted.
It's tough to really enjoy certain parts of Shaman King, because honestly, I guess I'd almost like that only because it's one of the arcs that doesn't take seven chapters to get through. There's no plot in this series that does not run longer than a volume, essentially. Like, the first volume is mostly just short stories, so those stories go quick. Every volume after that is basically one plot all the way through. The second volume is this long story about them running into Ren's sister, who has this, you know, zombie corpse of a Bruce Lee XP, and they fight him for like four chapters, and then they beat him, and you're like, okay, well, that story's done. Like, no, there's more we have to do to this. And they, you know, they basically have to summon like his old master to come down, and then Yo inhabits like the channels his spirit, and then they have a fight for like three more chapters. You're like, okay, I get it. What you're doing, it's for the most part well written. I could enjoy it. Holy shit, that took up an entire volume, and it just keeps going like that. The encounter with Tokugawa is an entire volume. Basically, any fight within the series is going to take an entire volume, and it's not like, oh, well, it's filled with compelling and engaging action. You're just like, I don't know, it's just a lot of filler, it feels like. I'm like, how did this go on for another four chapters? Why am I at the end of the volume and nothing's happened yet?
Well, and the real problem, I think, is the fact that those fights you talk about, they're like very clear plot steps, I guess you could say. You know, everything feels really samey because just like, okay, here is the next, I guess, mini arc. There are overarching plots, of course. Like, the big overarching plot is the tournament to decide the Shaman King, essentially. Which, the Shaman King is like, oh, you know, if you become the King of the Shamans, it means that you will be able to communicate with the most important spirits, the most powerful spirits, the wisest spirits, and you will be able to become the next great spiritual leader of the entire world. And so everyone is fighting for that privilege, and also so that they can use the abilities from becoming Shaman King to accomplish their own individual goals. Some of them are very stupid. Some of them are very touching. Most of them are very stupid. So, you know, like, Yo's whole thing at first is like, oh, I'm doing it to be, so that way, you know, I'll just be the best and I'll be able to relax.
Wasn't it more so, I'm doing it so my wife will stop beating me?
Yeah, fiance. By the way, Yo has a fiance at the start of the series. And it's not like a Rama One Half thing where it's like, I didn't know about my fiance. Oh, now we've got to get used to each other, even though we hate each other. It's actually a nice change of pace from that, I have to say.
Love Anna. I really do.
Basically, Anna is this girl who's been set up with Yo. They're both like 13 years old, and she abuses him occasionally, but it's mostly like her being a drill sergeant so that he'll be prepared in his fights. And she's basically just being hard on him and training him so that he'll be prepared and stuff. That's like the most real conflict that they have between them. And so you've got a little bit of the, you know, slapsticky, oh, she backhanded when he did something stupid or whatever like that. But other than that, there's no, I hate you, well, I hate you, but they actually love each other. No, it's like they both clearly care for one another. And the whole thing about, do they actually love each other and stuff is like a moot point. It's like, well, yeah, it's an arranged marriage, but they actually care about each other. And yeah, Anna wants you to succeed, and that's basically it.
And they handle it rather well in that they address it without making it overt to the point where you're like, oh, is this like a romance series now? It's generally like very small moments when they're leading up to something larger, like when Yo's preparing to leave for the Shaman King fight.
They fuck.
They don't, well, maybe some people interpret it that way.
They have a kid from it.
I mean, yes, that fucking happens like 8 years later. They may have banged somewhere in between.
That's a pretty old kid.
I was just going to say that, yes, she asked to spend the night with him. And I read that as they normally haven't, you know, shared a room before, but she just, you know... The way they built up that moment before they leave for America, clear,
like,
they may never see each other.
They might have done it, because, like, everyone who's around them is like, yeah, let's just kind of leave them alone.
That's because they're fucking perverts. Everyone in this series is a fucking pervert, a weirdo, an idiot.
Actually, I would have loved in that one conversation if Ren, I think it was Ren that the guy I was talking to, would have been just like, why are you over here? Oh, it's because it's their last night together. He's like, they're 13, you asshole.
I actually have to look up something real quick, because I never actually really considered it until this moment, but, well, that was interesting that it came up. I want to talk about a side character in this series for a moment, and I'm trying to find out if they actually ever list his age, which I don't see, but the character I'm referring to is Ryo, Wooden Sword Ryo. He's sort of like the... I'd like to call him the butt monkey of the group, but the butt monkey of this series changes, like, every couple chapters.
Oh, God, it's so annoying.
And he spontaneously then becomes a badass out of nowhere for a while, and then he becomes the fucking sixth wheel after it. It's very up and down with him. But he's this kind of, like, goofy, silly character. He has, like, a big, you know, wacky pompadour.
Well, at first.
it gets even crazier from there. But I enjoyed him as a character. He's kind of like the character you immediately see and you're like, oh, this is the underdog character, because he becomes a shaman, but obviously very inexperienced, doesn't have a spirit as good as Yo's, you know, as all that. But he has this compelling story of, like, he's a collector of broken people around the world, and he's looking basically to just find his happy place, his best place, which is just the place he can be at peace with himself and help other people find it. He's generally a pretty good guy. He has a couple gimmicks to him, though. One of which is that they don't list his age, so I can't tell if he's supposed to be a pedophile or if he's also just a really big 15-year-old.
Anna at first.
His thing is that he likes girls who are very young, particularly, like, children. Like, any of the young girls who show up in the series, like the 11-year-olds or stuff like that, he's like, oh, what a cutie. And then, like, they meet, like, a grown woman at one point, and he's like, yeah, you're pretty, but not my type. To the point where there's an extra chapter omake at the end of the English volumes, where they put the girl with the Ren and Stimpy spears, whatever the fuck her name is.
Ren and Stimpy
spears. Yeah, they're all Ren and Stimpy. Like, I'm pretty sure they were inspired by him. It's her, like, as, like, an angel of love or something like that. And the antagonist is Ryo, and he's actually called in those little bits the Cradle Robber. And you're like, oh, this is so disturbing. Especially for a character they also seem to insinuate is gay later on, too. Because there's a scene during one of the tournaments where he, like, he fucking, like, hip tosses a dude, and they cut to the crowd reacting, and it's, like, some big fat version of the biker character from The Village People. He's just like, whoa, you go! And you're like, why would you point that guy out unless you're trying to insinuate something? I'm so confused about this character. I liked Ryu, though. I wanted to like him overall. He's just a very strange, strange character through and through.
I'll agree to that, because he was looking out for everybody, and there were points where I could even look past his lecherous acting, but at the end of the day, like, he really was looking out for everybody else, regardless of his expertise or lack thereof. But he didn't seem too annoying after he became part of the team. I don't know, like, it didn't seem too out there for me.
He's kind of got that Sanji personality where you're like, oh, okay, I can enjoy this character except for when their thing is, like, being, like, ridiculously hyper-sexualized and desperate. Which, honestly, is not that often for him. Most of the time, he's actually a pretty level-headed member of their group. And the thing that's so strange about him is he becomes a shaman, like, midway through the tournament. Like, the tournament started, they're doing the preliminaries, it's ended, and all of a sudden Ryu's like, yeah, I'm a shaman now. And you're like, holy shit, you've only been training for, like, 3 months. And then he goes on to become one of the strongest shaman in the world in the span of that, when so many characters' arguments are like, I've been training to be a shaman my whole life. I come from a culture of nothing but shaman. You're like, fucking Ryu apparently needed a summer vacation to get better than you are.
Well, it's weird also because he, like, joins the tournament, like, after the preliminaries. So it's like, did he just skip them?
There's so many questions I have. I'm like, everybody's presumed we had to go through the same preliminaries where you had to basically touch the officiator with your oversoul once. And there's so many characters who, like, have spirits that only work in conjunction with others. And I'm like, how did they pass this fucking thing? Like, the kids with the robot. I was like, one of them, I think, doesn't even do anything. He's just sitting around the robot. But no, I still like Ryu overall. And I found...
I'll tell you who I couldn't stand.
Okay.
Manta.
Oh, God, yes. Oh.
Fucking hate Manta.
I was so happy. It was the only time I think I've ever been happy to see someone start getting disemboweled. Like, I was just like, oh, good. Fuck you.
Okay, let me explain to you. Okay. At first, we have a sort of audience perspective main character.
That is what Manta's role is supposed to be.
He's not a protagonist. He's there to be our normal person in the series at first. And so he meets Yo, and this is how he reacts to everything. Yo is sitting on a chair, smoking a joint, and Manta's like, Yo, did you hear about this thing you have to do? Yo's like,
Whoa, man, you're harshing my buzz. Stop shouting everywhere, bro.
Manta, why are you so relaxed? Stop it! How can you be so relaxed?
Whoa, why don't you, like, not use your mouth to scream and instead roll me another quote-unquote cigarette?
Lollipop?
Yeah, another lollipop. Whoa.
Yo does something shaman-y, and then Manta then goes, Ah, why'd you do that? Ah! He is so goddamn annoying. And the thing about it is that after that point, Manta's role gets dispersed among the other characters. There always has to be one character observing everything, going, Ah! How is this happening? What? How is this possible? Ah! And that's, like, the only thing they'll do in that entire scene. They'll never, like, rise up to the occasion and do something. They'll just be an observer who's freaking out over something like that. Well, literally everyone else in the scene is handling it better. And it gets really fucking tiresome after a while. And the one part that really really started to bug me was actually that part where you talk about him getting disemboweled. Obviously, that puts him out of commission, so he can't freak out. Actually, he does freak out, and he starts coughing up blood. And it's like, oh, no, my reaction causes me to die. It's like, well, stop freaking out then. God. And Silva's observing the whole fight, and he's got all his spirits surrounding him. And they start having the freak-out reactions. Like, all five of them! So, like, everything that's happening is like, you are partners with a veteran fighter. How do you not know any of this?
You were also introduced to us as great spirits who supposedly had no ego. Why are you freaking out this much?
It's a really, really annoying thing that the series just constantly resorts to. I got so sick of it. I don't think there's ever a point where someone is not freaking out over something like that. I think the only parts it ever happens are like, no, this is supposed to be super serious. We're having, like, the one comedic character use this arc, have a serious moment, so there can't be any comedic freakouts or anything like that. Which, by the way, that's totally not Horohoro's element.
Well, no, the worst part, in order to get a point across late in the series, in the anime, Manta becomes a shaman.
Ah!
Oh, no. That's actually my favorite aspect of Manta's character, is he, like, completely fucking vanishes halfway through the story and barely shows up anymore. Like, he's just like, oh, I'm not a shaman, so I can't travel around in their shaman group, so I'll just be a contestant at this, like, supposedly exclusive event and just fucking watch it, but I won't actually, like, have much of a role in this story.
And then that's completely thrown out the window in the anime, which is a whole other monster in its own right, but...
Actually, that's a weird thing. I understand why Manta couldn't go with the group to America, because he's not a shaman. Why couldn't Anna go?
I guess...
She held down the fort.
Okay.
What, they're fucking...
their little shack that costs, like, $10 a month to rent?
Because it's filled with ghosts? They're haunted in...
Actually, I fucking love that detail.
I do love it.
How did this only cost $10 a month? Because it's haunted as shit.
Well, that's what I love, is that Anna's also, like, on top of being a militant, she's also ridiculously cheap, too. And she's only interested in making money. Like, anytime they're at a meal, she always leaves before the bill comes and just makes someone else pay for her.
She is efficient as hell. That is what she is. And she is darn good at it.
See, you know, talk about, you know, a character that always acts stereotypically so that then you can have them act differently to make a point. Anna is, like, the exact inverse of Manta when it comes to that. You know, she's always very serious and calm and cold, and she always knows what to do. She always knows whenever Yo can handle a situation so she doesn't panic when he's in danger despite them basically being in love. So then when she does start to freak out, it's like, okay, I know that this is actually serious now because the one character never reacts to anything is actually freaking out. Whereas Manta is like, I'm going to react to everything now! Nothing means anything because everything means everything!
And what I do like is that Anna also provides a unique perspective to things because she has a very... I'm trying to think of the right word for it. Essentially, she doesn't share Yo's opinion of going the extra mile necessarily. She's very like, you have to win the Shaman King tournament. So when he's putting himself at even greater risk, you know, to try to reach these people, she's the one who's like, just kill him. Like, just end this fight. Like, you can't take this risk. And it's not to the extent where you're like, oh, she's like an evil bitch or anything like that. You're like, no, she's just... She's basically Renegade Shepherd. You're like,
she's being pragmatic.
Yeah, she's pragmatic is a good way to say it. She's just like, no, you can't keep winning the contest if you put yourself into the, you know, situations like this. And after after he does, she's usually like, yeah, I mean, that's actually kind of what I like about him, is he will go out of his way for these people. But it's nice having a person who is going to provide these different viewpoints in there, and someone who you're like, no, I don't think, you know, it's not like you're a crazy evil monster or anything like that. It's just simply someone who's going to provide the alternate viewpoint to your, like, why don't we just be friends with everybody? Why don't we just make friends with the people who kill people and then make them into zombie warriors? I mean, they're super sad about that.
I really like this new voice you've got going for it.
Ren, I know your parents kind of murdered a whole bunch of people, but, they seem super sorry about it, so let's be friends with them and ride your giant drag mustache dragon around. That sounds fun.
What the fuck is this voice you're doing?
It's Yo. I'm Yo Asuraka, or whatever his last name is. What my last name is.
You were very close, Asakura.
I say I'm pretty good. That means I can have another one.
I swear.
Oh, this is the best day ever for Yo. Whatever my last name is.
It's like male lumpy space princess or something.
Make friends with the necromancer. That disemboweled his best friend.
Oh god, it was so stupid.
That one didn't bother me as much as some of the others, because at least it wasn't like in the same battle he fought with him, he like switched. Because there is a thing, a lot of people will comment on this, and I've heard arguments of it happening and people trying to defend it and so on and so forth, and I can understand both sides of it. A lot of times when Yo fights somebody, they tend to be pretty awful people, at least in the first perception we get of them. And sometimes we get a little bit more info to kind of justify them. And then sometimes we're like, no, these are really bad people. But at the end of it, they're like, yeah, but, you know, everyone can turn their ways around or something like that.
And that's why Faust did eventually grow on me, because it's like, at first everybody's lauding him up. It's like, dude, he's a necromancer. He's totally fucked in the head. Don't even mess with him. He's bad news. And then, yeah, he's disemboweling Manta in front of you for the match and all this other stuff. And, yeah, he's creepy. But then you actually get into it at, you know, after everything's said and done or in the middle of the fight. And it turns out he's just really freaking dedicated to his craft and his girlfriend.
And also you get a quick bit during the time period where they're crossing over into the U.S. where they meet him again on a plane. And he doesn't just, like, you know, wheel up to them, and he's like, hey, friends, like, they meet him, and you're like, no, this dude's still a freak and a weirdo who isn't on our side at all, because he just, like, is laughing while he fucking rides his parachute down from the, you know, disappearing plane. He's like, la 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 la, you're like, what a freak. Eventually, they do meet up with him, and he becomes a character, like, you know, he becomes part of their, you know, main group, but it's still a case of, like, alright, I get that this was sort of, like, a slow change you reached, and some thought was put in. Like, he didn't just show up to the group and he's like, I'm a good guy now. Like, characters actually talk like, he's kind of a monster. And they're like, yeah, but Yo figured it out and Anna had a pretty logical reason for why he should join the team, because his skills are actually pretty handy. And essentially her power does kind of resolve a lot of his character conflict of like, yeah, I can kind of just bring your dead wife down to talk to you whenever I really want, but I'm a bitch who's going to hold that over you so you work at my hotel for free.
Which explains exactly why she didn't just do that at the very start of when they first encountered, because yeah, that's just not the way she works.
Yeah. I think, for the most part, I actually enjoyed this series early on. I thought the first few volumes were kind of fun. There was really, you know, some down points to it. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. Up until they basically get to Patch City. You know, they meet the Great Spirit, and then that's when, like, the three-on-three aspect of the tournament starts. And that's where I really started to lose my interest in the series, because it's... there's things this series tries to do that are fine in idea, in theory, but when he goes to execute them, they just do not work whatsoever. And the one moment I'll point to is like the exemplary version of that is the first match that Yo's team has in the tournament against the Icemen. To explain it, there's essentially the group of three characters who are not from the same world, like, they're not, you know, people who came into the tournament together. They're you know, from just happen to be from three cold nations. They bound together and you know, they form teamwork using their spirits in conjunction with one another. And they have, like, a brief kind of spat with Ren's team prior to the fight to kind of show off and introduce their abilities. Then they're going to go up against Yo's team. And Yo starts the match off, before they even actually begin the match, he's, like, walking out. He reveals that he has evolved his Oversoul into a two-tiered level. Like, it's you know, crazy strong. He summons this giant sword. It's incredible. Everyone on the Iceman's like, oh, holy shit. Like, how do we win this? And then he's like, nah, I don't want to, you know, it's too much work to summon it all the time, so I'm not going to. They enter into the match, and the Iceman's first thing is like, all right, we'll kill the shit out of Faust. And you're like, oh, that's kind of an evil thing until you remember, like, the previous match before that had a little girl and an Iron Maiden who straight up murdered two people. So, if I was someone in this match, I'd be like, look, if they're not like a 20-something-year-old fit adult, I'm going to assume they're some kind of horrible monster and murder them first. That's just my thought process. And what happens from that is they're like, okay, now it's our time to show off Faust, and he's not actually crippled. He can use his dog, his legs, and let's show off what his, you know, is his motivation, why he's working with the Yo's team, and here's this new super form with Eliza, and, you know, it's this giant Eliza, go, you know, monster demon thing, and you're like, okay, you know, he's going to win the match for them. And he's like, no, I'm just going to stand there. And the Yes Men are like, all right, fine, well, we'll attack Yo, and they attack Ryu, and, like, Ryu blocks it instead, and then Ryu has his moment. You know, he shows off that his spirit can kind of heat him up so he can't be frozen, and he reveals that his spirit, too, has evolved somehow. It seemed like a big deal when Yo did it, and then fucking Ryu does it, like, seven chapters later, because, again, nothing in this series can happen in a short burst, but this is all one fight, yet at the same time, not enough information was given to us. So he reveals his new Super Oversoul, which is like a Hydra Dragon fucking Naga motorcycle thing. It's this insane beast, and he's on top of it, and like, all right, so these two are going to come in. And then Yo shows up, and he's like, no, I'll handle this. So the Iceman are like, well, fuck, we'll come at you with an attack that Yo literally dodges by doing nothing. Like, literally, he does nothing. Something like his spirit energy is so gentle that the moves knocked around it, or it's really stupid, and I don't understand it. And Yo's like, explain his logic, like, yes, we could have beaten you like four times already, but we're showing off how awesome, super crazy, and mega great we are, and we're doing it solely so that you will put your full effort into this. Actually, they don't say it to him. I think it's just like his inner monologue explaining it. We're going to do this to force you to put your full effort out so that when you lose, you'll have no regrets because you know you gave it your all. So they do this big mega attack. Yo summons Spirit of Sword, cuts right through it, defeats them. That's the end of it. The big problem with it is it goes on for so long with nothing happening and no tension to it. Because from the fucking opening bell, we know that Yo's team's going to win. Yo states it himself before the match. He's like, I can win it in one move. Ren leaves before the match begins because he's like, this is already over. Yet a volume and a half of this fucking series is this fight that goes nowhere when the team that ultimately loses is the more compelling one because they're not being assholes and showing off all their special awesome abilities and standing there. You're like, these guys are compelling. They seem interesting. They came from fucking nowhere, teamed up and made good tactics together. And you guys are fucking showing off your super awesome ghosts and then just standing there. You guys are dickheads.
That was like, the most focused rant I've ever heard from you in a long time, Chris.
I thank you. And the thing is I can grasp the logic they're going for. The idea of saying, I want them to give it their all so they have no regrets. I can understand that. It's just in execution, I'm like, Yo's an asshole. From the very beginning, he could have ended this, and he didn't. He doesn't explain it to anybody, and all of his friends join in with him being like, look how awesome we are. It's like the guys who, you're playing like an ARAM in League of Legends, and you've clearly lost, but the enemy team keeps hurling themselves into your fountain just so the game can keep going and they can keep murdering you, and you're just like, just end it. Just end this pain.
It's one thing to flaunt it in that fashion. I'll agree that the logic is there, but to have it as dragged on as long as it did, that's the point I can agree with you with.
I can't stress how long it goes on for. It really is like 12 chapters of them doing this, and the thing is, you could easily have resolved it if at some point prior to this, you introduced Faust and Ryu having these ghosts. You know, you introduced they have these powers in a previous fight where them revealing that actually matters. So the way this thing starts is, you know, they summon their big thing, and, you know, Ryu summons his big thing, and then Yo steps in. You do this in one chapter. Like, they've summoned their big thing, and Yo's like, you've seen the best we've got, now can you stand against that? And then they do their big attack, and you satisfy the same thing. Instead of, like, four chapters for each character to be like, look how awesome I am. I'm the best person in the world. Oh, I'm at my pinnacle? All right, well, I'll just stand here then.
What they should have done is they should have had Yo's team have to fight in a massive battle royal against five other teams and wear themselves out to the point that they're all on the brink of collapsing, and then go to the next team, who are fresh as a daisy, but because they're so determined, the other team immediately gives up.
You're just like, oh man, these guys are too good. We'll just give up.
I think I'm gonna lose. Oh well. I guess I'll just give up.
Like, it's tough. This is one of the few times I can think of where I'm like, this is a battle manga where almost the entirety of it is a tournament, and yet I honestly cannot recall a single fight that stands out in my mind. It is a series that actually has really poor action, despite the fact it has creative abilities and, like, a premise built around combat.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of summoning shamans in order to then combine with them, I think is really cool. And mm-hmm. I think that, in general, the whole aesthetic and the whole premise of the series is really cool. I like the idea of, you know, shaman combat, where it's like all these different kind of spirit mediums, basically, from various different cultures, can be part of this. And you can combine a lot of different spiritualities and so on and so forth. You can have, you know, a Miko in the series. You can have, you know, a freaking person with a dowsing rod in the series. And it's like, oh, that they're all shamans in this way. I think it's a cool aesthetic, and I like that, and I like the way that the spirits work, where they combine the spirits into physical things, whether it be their own body or something else, in order to use them in combat. I think that's all really cool. That said, I agree with you. It's like, I struggled to remember a moment in the series where I was like, oh, that was badass, and I'll always remember that. You know, it's like, it's in execution, nothing really stands out, and a lot of it, I think, just comes down to the fact that almost everything is really easy for Yo and his friends.
Yeah, that's the thing. His mantra is, everything will work out. You know, he says it several times, and that's his logic, too. There are points where he's just like, what are you going to do, Yo? And he's like, I don't know, but everything will work out. And there are points where you're like, okay, it's kind of refreshing. But a lot of times it's just frustrating, because I'm like, you don't have an answer. You have no idea how this is going to work, and you just bumblefuck your way into winning.
He's like, I am a wise shaman.
You're right. It's just like, everything will work out. Everything's fine. We'll do it right. And then Hao just comes in and does his shit. And then that's my memorable point of any kind of fight. Whenever Hao just steps in and is just like, no, I'm going to do this my way and intervene. And just, I have one of the pure elemental spirits of fire. And screw you guys. I'm going to do my thing. And he is so calm about it.
And also, women apparently love the shit out of him. Like, he's super awesome and cool.
Well,
and
he's a slightly older, evil Yo. Of course they love him.
Yeah, he wears, like, big baggy pants with, like, the straps going down. Like, he's like a character. I'm almost like, you built this for fangirls to fall in love with, I feel like. Twincest and fucking a baddie? Come on, you got it.
By the way, yeah, it turns out... It really, honestly, I was kind of surprised that they didn't really hold on to it for very long. Basically, we meet Hao, who's the main villain of the series. He looks just like Yo. So it's like, wonder if they're related somehow. Turns out, yeah, they are. And, like, Yo is, like, his long-lost, resurrected twin thing. It's kind of a weird explanation to basically just say he is his clone, essentially. So, yeah. I mean, it's a really
big family problem.
it's obvious from, like, the moment you first see him. It's like, that looks just like Yo. Like, that really looks just like Yo.
Yeah.
Like, even with, like, you know... Actually, that's something I guess like, I give credit to for the series, is that the characters do look very distinct from one another. And I always love that with character designs where, you know, they don't have to be like, oh, different hairstyle. Vibrantly different hairstyle for you to tell them apart. You can just look at someone and be like, oh, that looks very different from that person. And when Hao shows up, his hair is different from Yo's, and he's not wearing headphones all the time, so it's like... But that guy looks a lot like Yo, huh? And you were supposed to think that, so.
Yeah, and they don't hold on to that one for, like, hour, like, years.
No, it's like...
It's not like Obito and fucking Toby. You're not like, okay, let's, you know, you've eliminated every other option. Let's just...
Yeah, it was like five chapters later where they're just like, oh, Yo is like, Hao's fucking... resurrected twin or some shit.
they I don't know if it's that quickly, but they definitely make like a note like, yeah, the connection, there is a connection between them, and then pretty quickly afterwards you can make the guess they're brothers, and they don't like hide that fact, and then I think it's like two volumes later it like comes out fully and he admits it to everybody, like, yeah, it's my brother.
And it's not even that, it's like he's part brother, part ancestor, because he's the resurrected spirit of, you know, great 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 etc. grandfather. And he's just that upset with humanity that he's just like, no, I'm going to become Shaman King and just, you know, introduce my will to everybody else. And he's like, no, that's his whole MO.
And that's what I like about him, because I feel he's actually effective in that way. They explain he has this ability to essentially read minds. He can, you know, hear thoughts of those around him when he chooses to. And from that, he's basically come to the conclusion, like, humanity is full of greedy, awful people. And I'm going to become Shaman King to eliminate that. He almost does once and, you know, just loses out before he can accomplish it. And this is his chance to basically get it done this time. And he has his interest with Yo because Yo is his other half, you know. His mortal body is still, you know, technically twins with him. So he's very interested in what his other half has to say about this, particularly since it seems to oppose him. So you get this idea, you're like, all right, this is like an evil villain who wants to destroy the world, but I can kind of understand where he's coming from. This essentially godlike kind of mystery entity who's like, I've seen what humanity has to offer, and it does not impress me. You know, I don't like it. Especially since the series that seems to have a big emphasis on the idea that man is slowly destroying itself, or at least destroying nature, and that needs to be stopped. Mm-hmm. Those themes kind of run into some weird tangles when you get to the ending of the series, but I feel we should hold off on discussing that at least right now. I'm trying to think if there's anyone we've really...
Well, you haven't talked about Horohoro.
Horohoro. This is fucking most worthless character in this series. He is absolutely fucking worthless. He is introduced in this first fight with Yo. He's like his introductory character in the tournament. Yo beats him. And basically...
Kicks his ass, really. Yeah.
And if you want to, like, be like, oh, well, I only want to read this series when fucking Horohoro, like, gets shit done. Like, yeah, I'm like, all right, well, I guess you'll be skipping the next 24 volumes then, because he does nothing, fucking nothing. Every time he gets involved in a fight, it's to get his ass whipped. Every fucking time. There is one moment at the point I got to in this series. I missed, like, 60 chapters at the end. I just couldn't get through all of it, and I lost a lot of my steam. But at the point that I got to, there is a scene where he's basically come to the fact that essentially power levels are a thing in this. And his power level...
That annoyed me so much when they first hinted at that. Like, when Yo and Ren have their rematch, And Silva's watching it, and his spirits are just like, oh, wow, Yoda's actually doing pretty good. And he's like, no, he's lost power. What do you mean? Why don't we know this? Even though we're spirits and are veteran fighters.
What spirit power? I'm like, you stupid fucking snake.
Check out my scouter, basically. And he just, like, points it at both Ren and Yo, and he's like, see, they started with this amount of spirit power, and they've got this much left. Each time your oversoul shatters, you lose whatever you put into it. So you can put up to 100 into it, and then if you break it, you lose 100 spirit power. And so Yo started with less than Ren, and also he's taken a loss. And it's like, how the fuck is spirit, like...
Such a perfectly quantifiable energy.
Simple solution, drink an ether.
Yeah, they're just like
nah. Final Fantasy at that point.
It really is like it's like quantified to exact points. Like, oh, he has 42,000 spirit power. I forget what the term they use in this, like Fukuru or whatever, fucking
whatever
the fuck it is. But essentially, it's like it's spirit energy. Like he goes on, he runs into an opponent, and he's like, I don't have enough spirit energy to beat him. But what I'll actually do is. I'm trying to remember the exact way it goes. He's getting his ass whooped against two people. He tries to defend some people, gets his ass whooped. His dad shows up out of fucking nowhere. Like, he brings up his dad in the chapter before us. He's like, Dad would sure be disappointed me. And the next chapter, his dad's just there. And he's just like, well, my son's dead. I guess I'll sail off into nothingness. And he just starts sailing away on a boat. And then, you know, Horohoro gets up and he, like, motivates himself to be like, well, I can't win with my spirit energy, so I'll just combine my, you know, commitment with all of the other spirits around me. Yeah, like, he basically, embodies the other spirits around him, channels them, and that, you know, manages to form enough spirit power to beat some Lego dinosaur bullshit. It sounds so stupid as I explain it. I'm even like, it's so goofy when you're happy. Like, his dad just shows up out of nowhere. Horohoro does this. You know, manages to win, and then his dad, like, just sails back, and he's like, good on you, son. I'm like, motherfucker, the last chapter, you're like, son, I have no son. You're sailing off, just abandoning him to his dad.
Like, he goes, like, around one island, circles back. He's like, what are you talking about? I've been gone forever.
No, I believed you the whole time, boy.
Do you remember what I told you so long ago? First of all, it was literally 5 minutes ago. Second of all, you said you never wanted to see me again. No, no, no. What that means is...
Third of all, I didn't even know I had a dad until 5 minutes ago when I spontaneously introduced you.
What are you talking about? I've been here the whole time.
And you just showed up in the fucking tournament grounds in the area I happened to be in. It's just like, he's such a worthless character because all he does is lose. He's present through almost the entire series and does nothing but get just stomped. And he's not like an entertaining character beyond that. He's just another wacky character in the series that has like 4 or 5 wacky characters in the main group already. He doesn't even have enough like... personal motivation like Ryu does, where he's like, no, friendship's really important to me because I collect broken people and I hate to see people wandering and lonely and lost. You know, he doesn't have that. He's like, I want to make sure fucking butterfields are grown or whatever the bullshit plant is he wants to make a field out of. And that's essentially the end of it. Otherwise,
because his thing is like, Yo, after Yo beats him, Horohoro has this whole freak out where he's like, oh, I'll never be able to fulfill that promise. And Yo's like, don't worry, I'll make sure when I become the Shaman King to do that. And you're like, no, it doesn't mean anything unless I do it. It's like, well, it's nice to know that, you know, you're not just going to sit on your ass and you're still motivated to follow your dreams and stuff like that. But it's like, well, I'm not actually invested in you doing that, though, because I know... that Yo will do that for you.
Yeah.
I really wanted to like Horohoro more also. Like I said, I liked his aesthetic. I liked the fact that he's like, I have, you know, favorite elemental power. He manipulates ice and water. I liked his backstory. I liked his, he's basically Ainu, which is Japanese, you know, native, like true native Japanese, like we have the Native Americans. And, you know, they have their own spirits and everything like that. And that's why I thought his motivations were actually pretty cool for what it was. But as Chris said, getting beat up every freaking match and everything else, making him look like a yelling idiot, does not play well into your favor.
Like, you mentioned it before, Nick. Masande shows up, reveals he has this awesome ability, and to show off how awesome his ability is, guess, of course, who has to get fucking just stomped by him in Horror Horror. Shockingly, Ren does too, which I still don't get, because that was supposed to be a character you... that's a dude you want to protect.
Well, yeah, that scene confused me so much when that happens. I went back a few times because, all right, Horror Horror's the hothead, despite the whole ice thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's, like, takes tremendous offense to fucking... He's got such a weird name. I didn't bother remembering it. He's so offended that he is like, well, fine, I'll kick your ass. And he straps his, like, snowboard blade onto his arm and charges him. And then he gets his ass kicked. But then the guy's like, you know, watch the pendulum and does all this stuff. Lysander, that's his name.
Lysander, yeah.
And then out of fucking nowhere, he launches his, like, killing blow against Horror Horror. And fucking Ren's there taking it, too!
Yeah, Ren's like, oh, God!
Like, Ren wasn't even fighting the guy. He was just hanging back. And there's like, oh, suddenly I'm being attacked, too! What the fuck?
It's like, it's as though the mangaka started drawing the panels like, shit, this character's too small to be Ryu. I guess it has to be Ren! Like, he was like, oh, shit, I didn't put the other character I could easily abuse into this scene. Fuck. Well, it's not gonna be Yo. Sorry, Ren. You got the short straw here.
What do you... At that point, Ren is like, you know, the badass second in the series.
He's the Vegeta, the Kaiba of this series. You know, he's like, I'm not the hero, but I'm like, I'm the badass who's, you know, slightly cooler than the bad guy or the hero in a way, kind of.
Which, by the way, I still think a lot of the writing in Shaman King is very iffy. When Ren basically becomes a good guy, he actually has a very, you know, basic kind of transformation, which is this world is kind of crappy. And there's a guy who's infecting it, that's my dad, and I need to defeat and kill my dad in order to stop that. But then he gets found out, and so he's captured, and at this point, Yo basically tells everyone when he hears about it, you know, he is our friend, we should go save him. Even though Ren has not been friendly with him before, he's just been Yo's rival. Mm-hmm. But they go and save him, and in the process of breaking them out, which takes like two chapters.
Yeah, it's like, we need to save him. End of the chapter, him in prison.
We save him.
We next chapter, Yo's team shows up in China, and the chapter ends with Yo being like, let's get you out of those chains, buddy. You're like, well, this was tense. And you're like, well, this surely this arc's over. And it's like seven chapters later. You're like, holy shit, they're still fucking talking to his shitty family.
It's so...
No one's called the police yet. They're going to forgive them.
And despite all of that, I still like Ren.
Yeah, no.
I think it's pretty cool. I have no idea what the fuck it is. I think it's just that he is the most straightforward mirror to Yo that there is without him being evil. You know, he's like, he's very dedicated. He's, instead of being very peaceful, he's very, you know, straightforward and strong and, you know, bullheaded, really. And he's very combat heavy. And he's somehow cool, despite basically being a stupid little Chinese kid.
I never liked his spirit, though.
He has kind of a lame spirit, yeah. I like his fucking glaive that he's got, though.
Yes.
I can dig Ren for the most part. His motivation, I wish, had been a little bit more emphasized. Because essentially he's like, oh, I've been really murdering people and a pretty horrible person. I've committed a lot of sins in the name of my family, and I refuse to let that happen. You know, he goes into the whole thing, like, can a person ever truly be forgiven for what they've done? I don't know, but the only way I can ever start to make it up is by living and making up for what I've done. And you're like, that'd be cool, like, if they kind of emphasize that. And they probably do towards the end of the series, because Ren essentially doesn't become the main character, but he becomes the strongest character, from what I understand, at one point. When he gets, you know, brought back, he, you know, his power levels have increased to the fact I think he's supposed to... And he's also still in the tournament, because Yo gets knocked out, or, you know, quits, whatever the fuck happens.
He withdraws as part of an agreement.
Basically. Yeah. I got to all that, and I guess Ren becomes essentially like, well, we have to put all of our focus behind you now, because we're not... It's certainly not going to be fucking Choco Love and Horror Horror over here.
What are you talking about?
But, like...
Look at my snowboard moves.
Look, I summoned a big wall of ice. Oh, I've been beaten by someone else who uses ice!
The fucking thing... I was so annoyed in Horror Horror's very first mini-focus arc. Where he goes to, like, pacify the bear. Wait, yeah. What was his name? Like, Apollo, the bear's name?
Boris, I thought was the bear.
Well, like, because he goes to it, and, like, because Horohoro's only redeeming quality is the fact that he's a fucking tank who can take a fuck ton of punishment, he goes to the bear. The bear's pissed off because it's being hunted and his territory is being imposed upon, and Horohoro's like, you know, I know, you know, you don't trust humans and stuff, but, you know, it's okay, I'm going to bring you to peace. And he just lets it beat the crap out of him, like, knock him against a tree and claw at him and stuff like that. And eventually, the bear calms down and he befriends it and stuff. And immediately, the bear gets shot in the head.
Yeah.
And you're like... It's like, how, what kind of fucking hunter does that? There is literally a kid right in front of it. And you shoot the thing, and they're being like, oh, wait, there's a kid there. Hey, there's a park ranger there. Who the fuck doesn't check for park rangers when they're illegally hunting stuff?
And the best part is, it's he has to be, like, the only character in the series who don't get redeemed for their evil actions. Like, everyone else, there's some justification they give. Like, you're never too far away from, you know, being led on the right path. But they're like, no, fuck these hunters. They're monsters.
And he's like, oh, I'm gonna stop you. And they start shooting him, but he's, like, summoning ice around him, his armor and stuff. And he's like, oh, Horror's gonna kill these motherfuckers. And then he gets them, he's like, I won't kill you because that would make me even just as bad as you are. It's like, well, do something then. Bring their guns at least.
No, I'm gone.
Report them to the police. It's like, no, the ranger will take care of that. I don't need to do anything. She's one woman. They've still got their guns. Help her.
I feel like we've dodged around it long enough then. Should we discuss everyone's favorite totally insensitive character of Choco Love?
Best intentions.
I read the start of the series through collected volumes, English volumes, and in that, when I saw Choco Love, I was like, oh, this character's not so bad. And that's because I didn't realize how much they edited his lips. When I actually got to the point where I saw the unedited version, I was like, oh my god, you... Why? And it's so much worse when he goes into his oversoul form, because his skin gets darker and somehow his lips get bigger and whiter. And you're like, oh, why? And then on top of that, his entire backstory is he's part of a black gang in New York who murdered people, but he's led from that path by a white man who teaches him spirituality so that him and his gang all become African tribesmen. You're like, oh!
Wait a minute, how did this happen?
Oh, no! Why?
A rare white Native African.
It's so bad. Like,
it's painful.
It's... He is the most baffling character in the series, because it seems like he's only introduced because they realized, like, oh, fuck, I did a 3v3 tournament, and I only have 5 characters to split between them. Fuck, I'll just throw someone in. What's something I wanted to draw a lot of? Oh, I saw the Blackface movie recently. How about I do that? It's tough, because I don't want to say this, like, the series isn't racist, per se, because it's actually one of the most, like... at least cultural series, and at least it introduces people with different cultures. I mean,
it's diverse as heck.
Yeah, there's like probably what, like 5 different main religions represented in the series through different ways throughout it. So, I mean, props to them for that.
More than that.
Yeah, and I mean, even more so, like, yeah, it, you know, you're going to put an African American, you're going to put you know, African characters in this. That's great. I mean, spirituality is a big thing in, you know, those cultures. So you could do it fine. It's just the way it's implemented of, oh, this character happened to also, prior to this, be in a, you know, New York murder gang, and then him and all of his black friends become African tribesmen after being shown religion by a white man. You're like, oh, no. And you just give him these giant fucking lips.
That is jumping the laser gun shark.
It's, oh, man. It's, like, you I don't know... how I can stress my reaction going from the collected volumes into just reading the uncensored versions and be like, oh, whoa, holy shit, what happened? This character got 5 times more racist real quick.
The thing is, despite that huge spike in that absolute bullshit, he still has one of the better redemption factors in the fact of him, what was it? He goes up against these kids in a robot that's possessed by the person he killed years ago.
Oh my god, this is the fucking best series.
And so it, like, the robot's pissed because it's the dead father that was killed by him, and Chaco's like, okay, yeah, I killed you, so what? He didn't want his guilt to override him, and on top of that, like, he took some kind of hit or something else where he's now blind, so because of that, he gets, like, you know, Daredevil-ish enhancements, and he apparently gets more badass and some kind of redemption factor. And I'm just like, at least that kind of helped him, but everything else, when you spell it out with how he came to be, is just like, I don't know if you can ever counteract that, even with the best intentions.
It's just also, too, he's such a superfluous character in the series. He really only is introduced to fill in that sixth spot in the two groups, because almost everything else about his character is filled in by someone else in the story already. Generally, horror. I mean, between the two of them, they're pretty much carbon copies of the same character. Very comedically, you know, focused. They tend to be the ones who lose if someone needs to lose a fight. You know, they're kind of there to kind of bounce thoughts off of. Otherwise, though, he doesn't really have that much of a distinct factor to him, at least through all the parts I read. It's not like he's a bad character, and, you know, it's not the worst version of racism I've seen. I mean, I did read Ice Shield 21, so...
Well, and we watched Dragon Ball, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not as though he's the only mangaka out there who's, yeah, you know, been very insensitive to a culture, but... It's still, like, a character who I want to say I'd like, oh, I think I'd like this character. Especially, he's a comedian. Like, that's his whole gimmick. He's like, I want to make the world laugh. And he actually, like, goes into battle with, like, tactics that aren't, at least the first battle, with tactics that aren't actually, like, good at fighting. They're just there to be, like, gags. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, as someone who considers myself a comedian, I support you, good sir. But he's just like, God, you're so worthless. Like, nothing you do is unique to anyone else. Like, you just... Why did you not just not have fucking Lasande have a bullshit Sasuke arc and just throw him in and there you go. You don't have to do any of this. You've got your six man.
There's a character we haven't gone much into is Lyserg and his revolving door of what am I doing? Who's my allies? And Angel Cars. Let's talk about Angel.
I did not get... to all of the parts with the, whatever they're called, laws, X-laws. I didn't get to every single aspect of them. Like, I guess I missed the point where they became cars. So when I read the final chapter, and a point shows up where there's a bunch of cars driving into nothingness void thing, I'm like, what the fuck is happening? Now, I do want to note X-Laws in particular, because it's one of the things I'm really disappointed in that I didn't get to finish up, because that storyline seemed intriguing to me. They're a group that, on first impression, I was like, okay, they're the group who has a holy affinity, you know, theme to them, who we think are really good characters, but we'll very quickly find out they're lawful neutral at best, and, you know, they're not exactly good guys, and... You know, they're just as prone to evil acts as anybody else, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. But then we start to see some of the other members, and it's a group who's basically solely dedicated to killing Hao, and all the members have their own reasons for wanting vengeance against him. And some members go up against him in a fight, and they're knowing from the very onset of what they're doing, they're only there to basically die and help everyone else figure out what Hao's abilities and weaknesses are. And they go through in a way where you're like, oh, these characters... are actually kind of sympathetic in the fact that they want revenge, but they're kind of friendly with one another, and they don't seem like bad people, they're just really, you know, dedicated to this cause, and I can kind of get behind this. I mean, Marco seems like a massive wad of cunt, but everyone else in this group seems okay, I guess. So I kind of wanted to see where that all went. I didn't...
And there's Sean, who's like... Sean, they're... Ugh. Here's your little lolly girl, and she's
in
pain for the masses because she wants to, you know, take in all their pain. But she's like so holier than thou once you get to know her that even, you know, even in her infinite power, she's not able to take care of Hao or anything like that either.
Yeah, she was the other part of X-Laws that I was like, this seems kind of silly. The rest, like, the theme of the group and what they were going for seemed intriguing to me. Again, it's a point where I'm like, this is good in concept, execution-wise. I don't know if I necessarily agree with you guys on this, especially because they add more elements to Jean, John, whatever her name is, that she's like, she has a god-level spirit, and she's almost like this... third candidate to become Shaman King. Like, it's, you know, Hao, Yo, and then her. Those are, like, the three main possibilities. And then by the point I stopped, they were also now starting to introduce like a Buddhist group that I don't know if they also had their own fucking like, oh, and I'm also a big deal. Okay. But Lysurg on his own is just infuriating. He's the kind of character that just has that shitty story of like, my family was all killed,
my family was murdered, and I'm out for the killer. So you have to feel bad for me and immediately sympathize with me.
Yeah. And you mix that with the other character archetype I hate, where it's the boy who's so pretty he looks like a girl, and that's how he's introduced to us.
Even referenced by Ryo. It's just like
Ryo has a crush on him. He's like, "Oh, you're super cute," and he's like, "Really? Here's my dick." And he pulls his pants down, and Ryo's like, oh, and then they just stop drawing him as effeminate, so he actually does look like a boy. And I just sit there like, why did you have to make him a boy? There are 6 characters in this group. You couldn't get 1 female shaman in this group. You couldn't just throw her a fucking bone and put someone in here. Like, this, he's just this annoying character who only sits around moping because he leaves Yo's group because he's like, Yo's not strong enough to become Shaman King. X-Law are strong enough, and I need to make sure Hao pays. And you're just like, I don't care. You barely were introduced to us. You're a cameo character to me at this point still, and I don't care about your side plot. He's the one character... somehow he got redeemed, because at the very end of the series, they introduced the 5 characters most important to fucking Yo to help team up with get... like, ancient spirits, and Ryu isn't included in that list somehow, but Lasande fucking made it in there, so I don't know who he blew to get into that final group, but I was pretty infuriated.
He gets the fire spirit out of everything. They took the fire spirit from Hao, because he apparently transcended that, so here's the spirit of fire, and Lysurg gets it. What the hell?
Well, you know, because then he gets revenge on Hao with his own power, see? Right? Right?
Well, yeah, except they're all using the attacks, I think, to encourage Hao to be a better person, and then a spirit train comes up, and every fucking character we ever met in this series ever also shows up to, I don't know, be like, yeah, man, he ain't so bad, till you read the last chapter, and essentially the characters even admit, they're like, well, I guess we didn't really change anything. I hope Hao doesn't murder us all. Credits!
No, it's okay. We all had kids. We're fine. See? Happy ending.
By the way, Hao wins.
Yeah, Hao wins. He becomes Shaman King, and that's the point we're kind of left off with, is like, everyone shows up, and they bring his mom out, and that's like the big reveal. It's spoilers.
His Hao mom has a mother.
Yeah. Their mom, like,
a... Hao had a bad... complex.
Yeah, his mom shows up and slaps him, and that's like his motivation to be like, fine, I'll give humans another chance. They better not blow it. And then, like, we don't find out more from that, but there's like a small conversation between like the main characters afterwards before Yo shows up for like the big end. Like, oh, look, you see Yo, and everyone runs together and swings. Where the characters are like, yeah, I know we're trying to work, but I mean, you know, money's what makes the world go around. Yeah, man, sigh, credits. And you're like, what a, not bleak, but unresolved ending. Yeah, I'm like, this doesn't really answer anything. Is Hao going to murder everybody now? Because he was...
Red married Jean, Chris. That's all you need to know.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting in its own way. There's actually one thing. This is completely, like, this isn't really even, like, a point to bring up about the series, but this is something that was on my mind from very early on that I almost wish the series had been about instead. But in, like, the second volume, they make mention of the fact that, like, previous Shaman Kings have been great spiritual leaders, and they reference the fact that, you know, figures we know, like Buddha and Jesus, were also likely Shaman King. And, like, oh, that's kind of, like,
That's really cool.
That's, yeah. So. Until you stop to think about the concept.
And it's a neat and blasphemous explanation for there being... multiple, you know, saviors,
yes,
essentially.
And it's really weird, though, when you start thinking about the context of the series, and I'm like, holy shit, there was a point where Jesus oversold his fucking carpenter tools in a massive tournament, and I want that series so bad! Like, it's the Shaman King Tournament of Jesus, and he's just like, Spirit of Chisel! And he summons like a 90-foot-long chisel, and he just stands back and pokes people down constantly. Like, I fucking hate Jesus! His tactic is so fucking cheap, I can't beat him! And he's like, Shaman King, baby! And he's wearing a sash that just says Shaman King, and it's raining confetti down. He puts on sunglasses. He's like, meh, meh.
Where'd you get those sunglasses? They don't exist yet.
I'm Shaman King.
My computer, and this pay-per-view is not showing up.
He's like, I'm Shaman King, baby, and he gets on his angel car and starts driving away, but he's still doing like finger guns into the air, like he has no hands on the wheel.
I want a crossover between Shaman King and Let's Bible.
Oh dear, is that the one where that I keep seeing with Jesus and Buddha?
No, that's Saint Seiya.
That's the ongoing one that they had. Yeah, where a female Jesus and a Buddha. The one that I did an episode though on a one shot where basically Jesus is a chick that the main character is trying to bang while he's trying to protect her from Satan, who is also a guitarist. It's an amazing manga. Anyway,
I don't know. Is there anything else to really bring up about this series? Trying to think if there's anyone we like missed. We've hit on basically all the main characters. I mean, Amidamaru is like his main spirit companion, but
it's weird that he starts to get a little de-emphasized towards the end too.
What's so strange is he's not like, you know, generally when there's like a ghost in a series, like a Sai or a Yugi or something like that, Yami, like you don't find out that character's past until the very end, if ever. But Amidamaru's story is told in like the second chapter, and then that's it. Like, he's like, no, that's my entire character. Didn't turn out I'm some ancient spirit of greatness or anything like that. There was no hidden depths to my character. I had a blacksmith who was a really good bud of mine, and he died, and I died because I had accidentally betrayed him, and that's it. And later on, I evolved into the very emphasis of what a sword's supposed to be, but, you know, fucking Ryu does that anyway later, so who cares, you know? It's sort of weird that his ghost companion really doesn't have more, you know, crazy depths to him. It's all kind
of... To be fair, at that point, he's dead, and he has nowhere else to go. So that's why he's all like, yeah, I'll be your spirit companion. Oh, there's this tournament? Cool, let's do this.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it at that point.
The weird thing about it, though, is that, you know, he's introduced as Yo's partner, you know, and Yo has this very... His very first fight with Ren is, you know, he does this thing because Ren is just like, oh, you know, the spirits that Shaman summoned are just tools. And so the fact that you are cooperating with your spirit... means that you, when you combine with them, you can't actually perfectly combine with them. See, the best way to do that is just to, you know, completely beat them down and have them submit to you. And Yo's like, no, that's not the way it is. And so he manages to, like, achieve the next level of power by being perfectly in sync with Amidamaru. And then it's just like, and then Amidamaru just becomes kind of a supporting character. Wait a minute, what about you being super awesome best buddy spirit partners with Yo? It's like, yeah, I sort of...
I forgot, I wrote another bit to the whole Jesus becomes an oversoul, where he fights with Pontius Pilate, and Pontius Pilate quotes, "My hands will never be clean, Jesus, so I might as well strangle you with them." I want to take all the Catholic education I got just to make this extremely insensitive series.
Oh, that's great.
Speaking of insensitive...
Chocolate love again? All right. So, I mean...
I was actually going to go into the Patch Tribe.
Oh, yes.
Because we're first introduced to the fact that, okay, Yo may be... He may be a spiritual medium, because he's just like, I'm chill, but I can talk with ghosts, it's cool. But then he's like, okay, he's thrown into the tournament, but then... He's told that everybody has an officiator to be like, okay, they're representing from the tribe, they're representing him. So Silva ends up coming up and is like, no, you need to be better than this. And he trains him by basically throwing a totem pole cannon in his face. That is a thing.
Yes.
And basically shows him what Yo was doing.
It was kind
before.
Of wonderful while being very stupid.
What Yo was doing in the past was basically taking Amidamaru's spirit and putting him straight into him, which was actually not doing him any good. So instead, he puts it into a, you know, a sword or whatever he had at the time, and that ends up being better for him in the long run. And that's how he ends up besting Silva. The rest of the tribe is basically looking after everybody else. Ren kills his officiator because he's like, okay, if I have to land a blow on you, how about this blow? And just,
twice.
Oops. But I just liked the, again, I just liked the aesthetic and the fact that they tried to remain neutral, at least right up until the end of the series, where they end up becoming the defense and tests against Hao becoming Shaman King, because, okay, Hao wins the tournament, and then he has to go to this special place in order to ascend himself. And the other patch members end up becoming, like, the steps down into the cave or wherever, and I'm just like, you know, I really like the concepts, but because everything was going so fast, I couldn't enjoy what was going on, and that made me upset.
I felt that way about the entire series. You know, everything just kind of happens so quickly that a lot of stuff doesn't really have time to sink in. And even the you know, arcs that seem to go on longer than they should, individual moments don't feel like they have a lot of time to breathe. And additionally, you know, characters don't feel like they land as well as they should because of that. It feels like, you know, a lot of the characters we've been criticizing and stuff, like, oh, you know, what the fuck was the payoff for him? Why was this guy so stereotypical? And so on and so forth. A lot of them don't really get that big moment where it's just like, okay, I feel connected to them and I feel like they made a huge step. And it just, it's an improperly paced series overall, I think.
There's big problems with its pacing. It doesn't delve into the characters when it should. It seems like development, a lot of times, for these characters seems to happen off-screen. You know, when Ryu reveals he has, like, an evolved Oversoul, it should be an insane deal, since evolving an Oversoul seems to be a huge, you know, factor in and of itself, and he just does it, and his motivation's like, Yo is my best place, so I'm going to do this to protect Yo. And you're like, this really seemed like this could have been a huge moment for this character, and suddenly he got insanely strong enough to do it, and it just seems to have happened spontaneously out of nowhere because he was a joke character before this. And there's just other instances where you're like, it seems like you could have done something with this character to seem to have suddenly gotten stronger. For the series as a whole, I stick to the idea that it's a series that has good concepts to it. I like what they were going with Hao. I like the idea of Yo as this kind of easy character. I like his, you know, having like a relationship with Anna that's, you know, present throughout the series. I like the idea of his supporting cast. Ryu, I think, is a really compelling one. I think you can do a lot with Ren. I like these ideas. It's just the execution's off on almost all of them. I really struggle to think of standout moments in this series that I get excited about. You know, not excited about, like, holy shit, fucking Chocolove, super racist, let's talk about that. But, like, in a legitimate, like, oh, that was a really cool scene, or that was an awesome moment. I really just can't recall moments like that in this series. You know, even when I was enjoying it, I still can't think of moments where I'm like, that was an awesome scene or anything like that. It's just a shame. Like, I feel like if you're somebody who just likes ideas, if you don't care about the execution per se, just the mere concept of how something works is all you need to enjoy something, I think you can absolutely enjoy Shaman King, because I think it does have unique ideas to present. But if how a series delivers it to you is important, I feel like Shaman King misses the mark a lot of the times and doesn't hit on the payoff that it should be delivering.
I think that that's, I agree with pretty much all of that. It has a lot of neat ideas that I would like to see other series, you know, implement at times. I like the idea of a main character who doesn't have a will they, won't they romance. They're just like, oh yeah, they have a romance, it's just not, but we get away from the whole, oh, but we're a shonen action series, so, you know, we can't just have them get together and be kissy and stuff all the time. It's like, well, then just have him do other stuff and have them be, you know, busy with other stuff so they don't, you know, care too much about making with the lovey-dovey all the time. You can get around that issue while having them actually get together and not having that fucking tease element to it. I like the whole aesthetic of the series. I like a lot of the characters in the series that I probably shouldn't, because a lot of them are not written very well. I would have liked this series to have been executed better. I think that this would have probably been one of my favorite recommendations we had done if it had been done better, because it's got a lot of really good ideas in it. And it's not, like, written incredibly poorly.
No, it's not like a something like a Freezing or something like that where you're like, this is god-awful. It's just nothing is stellar. Nothing hits the mark where you're like, that was great. It's always just, like, a little bit off on that. Probably could have done that better. Like, it's just something that doesn't quite hit that sweet spot of being, you know, expertly delivered.
It's not badly written, I guess. It's just... it just doesn't live up to its potential. It's unimpressively written.
It's very riddle snakey, Nick.
What?
Riddle snakey.
What does that mean?
This is a very obscure joke I made on the Super Larious Brothers podcast to an old fucking Crashbox television show, an educational show on HBO.
Okay.
I could have sworn I've explained riddle snake to you before.
I think you have, and I just blocked it out.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll agree on all those points and the fact that there are amazing ideas. I love the character designs. It was written, I'm not going to say well, but it was written decently to where we could understand what was going on. But at the same time, I think the key words I want to drive home is slow down, because everything was pretty much flying at you so fast as far as, okay, this may be a tournament thing, but every little aspect of every character is trying to fly by you at such a fast pace, it never really gave you time for things to sink in. So slow down on your exposition and your development, and it may be a little bit longer, but at least something will have a little bit more weight in order for it to drive home.
So yeah, I think that about covers it, I believe.
There we go. We who would have thought that we could have gone about 2 hours on Shaman King?
Well, it was closer to like an hour and a half, I think.
Yeah,
that's a good long discussion. Like, so good job, Chris. Good, thank you very much, Jamie. And now to talk about a series with a whole different set of troubles.
Yes. So as we were talking, Fairy Tail Chapter 448, Fight the Power, has been simulcast released. Fight the power! Fight the power! So, I don't even know really why this chapter exists.
It almost seems like nothing happened.
It seems like you could have shown us the opening page and the last page and just assumed a bunch of bullshit happens in the middle. A bunch of fairy tale guild hall bullshit happens, basically.
It's like, okay, Khan is wearing a towel on the cover. This happens at the start, this happens at the end. Where's the rest of it?
Yeah, they're all at the guild. Everybody's partying because Master's returned home and the guild's all together again. And everybody's super wacky and goofy, and they talk about how Xerath and the guild, you know, the Albreath guild, whatever their thing is, they're going to be invading. It's definitely going to happen. Even though Makarov went over there to try to stop it, he totally blew it. He even admits that himself. He's like, that mission was pointless. Whoopsie poopsie.
Oh, most annoying fucking thing. First of all, they're like, oh, the master's back. And they're like, wait a minute, Urza is the master. And Urza's like, no, I'm stepping down. He's the master again. And they're like, so it's the third
time. Oh, my God, I missed that. It's such a nothing fucking speech bubble. What the fuck?
So they're like, so wait, he's like the third and the sixth and the eighth master now. Okay, whatever. It feels like one of those, like, Snowball 2 things where it's just like, oh, let's just pretend you're Snowball 2 and pretend this never happened.
I blinked and missed Urza giving up the fucking Guildmaster title. Oh my god, the past 3 months have been so pointless.
Well, and Makarov has this.
I feel like I'm fucking Adam Sandler and Click. I just fast forwarded a couple months and I'm like, what? How much time have I wasted? I'm so old now.
So, Makarov is like, I'm sorry, everyone. And everyone's just like, it's okay, Master, we forgive you. He's like, oh, and my plan, I separate you and I destroy the place you call home. No hard feelings, it's okay. And my plan was pointless, and they're still coming here, and their army is coming. And Natsu's like, who gives a shit? We're gonna kick their ass! That's basically it.
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, Makarov's like, yes, we shall. Let's do it together. And he, like, makes his guild shine, his, like, staff shine, which I guess is, like, his, like, alternate fights. This is
the second type of magic I can do.
Yeah, my first type, get really big and get punched. The second type is make things glow for epic speeches. And that's it. I know two types of magic as your third,
I can only do it for epic speeches. If we're in a dark cave and need to see our way, nope, can't like the step. Has to be for an epic speech. No,
but I can get really big in that cave and cause a cave-in collapse. Which has happened. That's how I'm the fourth guild master. And everybody's, like, super excited, like, yeah, we're fired up, let's do this, and, you know, like, we can't afford to lose this, and all of a sudden, Mavis shows up. There's a bunch of bulls. Every fucking
hello, it's nice to have you back. Third, sixth, eighth, 900th guild master, where the fuck you are now.
And I feel like someone should retort, like, are you a ghost, or what the fuck is up with you? Like, you show up, and sometimes you're real, and sometimes
well,
you're a spirit.
Well, actually does think that. She thinks, is this her spirit form, or is it some, or is there, she physical or something? It's like, she doesn't get a chance to answer it.
Yeah. I just want someone to call her on it, too. Like, are you real, or are you just fucking with us constantly? Are we being punked? Is one of the impractical jokers, like, hanging around here or something? Mavis continues, like, yes, you know, the guild has been sequestered as our guild's most closely guarded secret, Fairyheart, rather, and that's something that the rest of the world would never know about. However, there are two things I feel you must know. Firstly, why Xerath wants it so badly, and secondly, of my wrongdoing. And it goes to a page where, basically, Mavis is going to explain to us all the story of her and Xerath. The tale of a cursed boy and a cursed cursed girl, and a tale of the singular magic they sought. So again, you could have said, opening page has fucking Lucy in a towel, very provocative, and then everyone's Kana, back at the... Yeah, Kana.
It's very important, Chris.
Yeah, Lucy wouldn't be fucking in a towel.
She wouldn't wear a towel for no reason.
She has to be getting out of a bath or something. She does a lot. She takes 8 showers a day just so she can maximize the number of towel scenes she has. And then you're like, all right, and then they're in a guild, and then cut away to the end, and Mavis is going to tell a story about her and Xerath. That's it. That's essentially the chapter.
I like how we all... Fucking, like, I almost thought that someone was going to go, yeah, you fucked up, Makarov. But no, he, like, preempts it so that no one looks like a dick.
He's like,
God damn it.
He's like me when I was doing my stand-up all those times, where I'm like, if I make fun of myself for being fat first, no one else can. He's just like, I really fucked up, guys. Like, oh, no, you didn't.
Like, Laxus crumples up all his material and eats it.
He's like, I'm going to look like a real shit if I try to do these now. Yeah, fuck it. You old queef! Like, everyone's like, whoa! He's like, it was worth it.
Get off the stage! Oh, God. I was so annoyed. So wanted Makarov to get roasted.
It would have been pretty sweet if that had happened, but sadly, it did not. So, that's it. That's weekly manga recap, Nick. There's no jump this week.
Yeah.
And,
as a result of, basically, Oban Festival. And yes. They do this every single fucking year, where, I forget what series Fairy Tale Magazine Fairy Tale
Weekly Wednesday. Shonen Magazine, isn't it?
Or Shonen Sunday, I think it might be.
Yeah. They're also, like, similarly named that I forget which one's which.
Yeah. Weekly Shonen Magazine. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So there's Weekly Shonen Jump and Weekly Shonen Magazine. Mm. So, yeah.
And Shonen Sunday, I think, is a different magazine.
It is. So. Yeah. Basically, Weekly Shonen Magazine went on break last week, and Jump went on break this week. So we're already done with the Rika Bosha Weekly Manga. Wait, no, we aren't. Unaha's dead, never coming back. Okay, now we're done.
Handled it. I guess, do you want to mention the thing we're working on with Patreon? Patreon?
Go ahead, man. You know the whole thing better than I do, so you go ahead.
We've mentioned several times here that we're doing a Patreon, patreon.com/weeklymangarecap, and just this past week, we had a lot of kind of development going on with that. The first, you know, thing being that we reached our next goal, which was going to be basically making the podcast into a video podcast. So
now,
yes, understand that is going to take some time. It was not like, oh, we reached that goal, now we're going to start doing it. It was, we needed to reach this goal so that we can start facilitating doing that. This is going to require a lot of things. You know, I'm going to have to, you know, upgrade my computer. We all, both of us, have to get webcams, and then we're going to have to kind of configure a system for exactly how to make it work.
Yeah,
it's something we intend to do.
is going to require equipment as well as some degree of experimentation so that we can get everything nice and presentable and stuff before we actually do it for the first time.
Yeah. So it's just to say, understand it's not going to be something you're going to see this month necessarily or anything like that. I'm giving like a rough estimate that you should see it by the end of the year. It could end up happening much, much sooner, but it might not. I just don't want to give a ridiculously optimistic estimate and then have it turn out to not be accurate.
We would prefer not to set a deadline and then fail to meet it, basically.
Yeah, so we will have that. That'll be something coming up. We'll start streaming the podcast in video, and then essentially what will happen is we'll take an audio-only version, put that up on Podbean and iTunes, like always, still be free, but then the video version I'll be putting up on YouTube so that people can watch it, and I'll put timestamps on that specifically, so if you're somebody who wants to listen to the podcast, but you're like, I don't read World Trigger, and when do you guys stop talking about that, or whatever it may be.
Or if you don't want to be spoiled because you're trying to catch up on a series, for example, then you can skip past it, and you'll be able to catch up and go back and enjoy it later and stuff. Overall, it's going to be way more convenient for a lot of different reasons.
Yes, see? And a lot more work for me, which is annoying, but it'll be worth it. We did that. We also, last night, we recorded the bonus podcast. For anyone who's a champion patron for our Patreon, there's a bonus podcast for me giving out once a month. The bonus podcast for August is Top 10 Manga Badasses. We recorded that. Had a good time. Good long episode. So anybody who's a patron in the month of August will get that episode. We'll be releasing it out kind of widely to those people this weekend. But if you subscribe or you become a champion patron after the fact, like after that date, I'll just be sending it to you directly. So you'll be getting that. And I think we got one more episode this month. So I'll announce what like our next bonus episode is going to be at the end of that. But the last thing to note is that we're going to be introducing some new goals because we want to keep having something to work towards, something we can use to keep improving the show. So we have a couple ideas, and if you're curious, check them out. I made a post about some of them up on the Patreon, and you can check it out there. So I don't want to dig too much into that. You can go over, and there's plenty of thoughts there and all that, and you can have some discussion on that. I suppose we should actually give the thank yous then.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you, Jamie, for joining us for the show.
No, thank you. I'm honored whenever I can do something like this.
I know, it was cool. I mean, you really helped the discussion out, and it was nice to have your perspective on a few things, but is there anything that you'd like to pimp out there? I know you do a lot of streaming. I've tuned in a couple of times when you've done, like, Kingdom Hearts and Mega Man stuff.
Yeah, please feel free to give me a follow. I love having some people around. I know things are changing up for me a little bit as far as jobs and stuff are concerned, but I should still be trying to get on more often. Kingdom Hearts, Mega Man, Final Fantasy, occasional Smash Brothers. I'd love to have you all hang out.
It's twitch.tv/hawkfoot718, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it. Yay. Which I believe is also your Twitter handle, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Hawkfoot718. And in addition to that, yeah, thank you everyone for joining us for the episode. We record on twitch.tv/relity normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up as our plans change. So follow us both on Twitter to stay updated. He's at relity and I'm at yruler of time, and we'll let you know when we're about to start streaming and where. Also, be sure to check out all of our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. or on iTunes, which you can subscribe to by just following Weekly Manga Recap. Do we have any comments or whatever this time?
On iTunes? I feel like we did Bacon Procurement last time, which is our most recent one. So I don't believe we had any new ones.
That's fine.
Yeah, I think August 10th. Yeah, I think I would have gotten to that one next week. So
okay.
Don't have any quite yet. Although, all right. You do that, Nick. I'm gonna click and see. Maybe we made the list.
Well, be sure to check us out on iTunes so that we can beat those woodworking podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and leave a comment and the rating as well.
I'm trying to see if we've made the list this week. It doesn't look good. Unless we jump from like not being on the list to being like 64, I'm thinking we didn't make it this week either. Which means the woodworkers are still winning. Which means a lot of things. It means we're not doing enough, but I think it also comes on you guys. You're not giving it. You're not giving enough 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Also, be sure to send your questions for us to ask and suggestions for future manga for us to read to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, which, by the way, I'm going to be naming our suggestion for next time, although I haven't technically made my decision yet. Basically, okay. You're going to help me make the decision, Chris.
Oh, okay.
Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our talker, as you can check out his work in rockfanboy.deviantart.com, idrawboobs.tumblr.com, and patreon.com/Steve Mann. Special thanks as well go out to Felix Dark and the Infamous Planet for making those awesome visual editions of our podcast. And this time I don't have to pimp the straw poll, because we only covered the one series, and then...
Yeah, you could pick Fairy Tale this week, or nothing. He's probably not going to do it. It's like, I can't be bothered. Do you know how much I'd be bothered if you picked it? Okay. Do we gotta give a shout-out, so, to our new patrons.
Yes.
So, there's a couple people that apparently got missed, either because their names didn't show up, or for whatever reason, so... at the top here, I'd like to give a special thanks to Jason Graham and to Blockhead for their support, and hopefully I'm getting everybody this time who has hit up, but if I miss you for any reason, just let me know. But thanks to Connor Slaybaugh, Jacob Gray, King Doom, Jonah Bacon Lefkowitz, Joe Hilgenberg, I'm so sorry for this one person, because I'm sure your name is awesome, but I'm about to fuck it up hardcore. Thorsten Gorslig?
Thorsten Gorslig?
I don't know how to pronounce that B. What is it?
Let's see here. Let me see if
Because Yahoo Mail tries to translate it as, like...
Oh, no, because it changed the symbol to a fucking ampersand. We don't know what it is.
it's a B if you go in there. It's like that weird Norwegian B.
Oh, that's German.
Oh, is it German?
That is German.
Shit. Well, anyway, Thorsten. I imagine there's probably not too many Thorstens who are waiting, so it's to you, Thorsten.
It's to you.
Big thanks to you, buddy.
Thank you.
We also gonna give thanks to Connor Niblett, to Thomas Burrow, Jung Wang, Tim Gone, or Gone, I'm gonna say Gone, Oliver Ellis, Peter G, Jan Pasanuik, Felix Dark.
Thank you.
PX1, oh man, I love you, PX1. Your name's so, I can't possibly fuck that up. The only way to be better if someone puts themselves as my name, literally. I'm like, Chris LaRousse, damn it. Also, thanks to Andrew Trubiano, Teamster Twixar?
Twixar.
Twixar?
Twixar.
Oh, is it... What is it, Team Master? I think I call him Teamster.
Yeah, you did. Team Master Twixar.
That's like a fucking DJ's name. If you're not DJing, you should be.
T-Best Twixar!
Also, thanks to Christian A. Garcia Meza. So, thank you, everybody. Greatly appreciated.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for the continued support. So it's time to name what we're going to do for next time. So, Chris.
Okay.
I have two series that I went back and forth between that I could not decide between. So you are going to help decide which one we're going to do. I'm going to let you know right now. One has a reputation as being a bad series. The other has a pretty positive reputation, but I'm not sure. So I want you to pick a number between 1 and 2.
Well, isn't it just pick between 1 and 2? It's not a number. 1.5. There, fucked you up,
okay,
Nick.
Pick either 1 or 2. Fuck you.
Okay. I think, like, everybody always goes to the alternate option. I'm going to go 1. Number 1.
You have chosen Cross Game by Mitsuru Adachi. It is a romantic comedy baseball manga. I actually briefly mentioned this guy in our question and answer session last week. The guy who writes all those sports romantic comedies that I hate. So, this might turn out badly anyway. So, there you go.
Okay.
But that's what we're going to do, Cross Game.
What was the other one? Did I pick the bad one or the good one?
You picked the good one, because the other one is an ecchi harem series with a main focus on an incest pairing. So there you go.
Oh, God. I was real terrified, though, I was going to get into this. You're like, all right, Christian, you need to pick. One's Flame of Recca, the other one's Air Gear. And I'm like, you motherfucker!
You monster! And then you're like...
That's like choosing between which child I want to kill. Both of them, obviously, but...
Oh, God, Air Gear. That's the only other one I can remember vividly right now.
All sorts of awful.
So that's going to do it for Weekend Manga Recap this week. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you once again to Jamie for joining us for the show. And, yeah. It's going to be a little while before we can get through Cross Game because it was like a 5-year-long series.
So. Oh, was it? Yeah. Oh. I was like, sweet. Sounds like a real short series that probably got canceled because no one likes baseball and love. So, you know, we'll just... I'm of that assumption because I watched that god-awful movie with Jimmy Fallon where he was a Red Sox fan.
Oh, yeah. The
Drew Barrymore, I think, was the love interest.
I don't fucking know. I didn't watch it.
It was some girl who was popular in the 2000s and isn't popular now, which is really disappointing because Jimmy Fallon really shouldn't be the one who came out ahead in that deal. But, yeah.
Is that the one where Queen Latifah helped him to find his guts?
No, he had...
No, Jimmy, that was
like Taxi Driver or Taxi Man, Taxi Dude.
Yeah, Fever Pitch, that's what it was called.
Jimmy Fallon had a surprising number.
It was Drew Barrymore who played the love interest.
Oh, good, I nailed that one. She's like, hey, thanks, dickhead, for saying I'm irrelevant now. Fuck you. I'm like, aren't you dead? She's like, no.
No.
You're thinking Brittany Murphy. And I'm like, oh, I am thinking Brittany Murphy.
Well, you could be thinking of a lot of people, honestly.
She's like, are you thinking Amy Winehouse? I'm like, yeah. I have no idea why I thought you two were the same person.
Are you
person.
Thinking Anna Nicole Smith? Yeah, her too.
Yeah, I was thinking her. Are you thinking Leonard Nimoy? I was strangely confusing you and Leonard Nimoy up for a while. He's dead, right? Yeah, okay. Well, now I know.